Good morning, evening, afternoon, or whenever you're listening to this broadcast. It is Learn for Life News on the 30th of November 2012. And today we'll be looking at the Teach Meet coming up next week, the History Teach Meet, looking at the Institute of Education hack and the videos they've now got up showing you the making they've been doing, an interview with Terry Friedman about his Bring Your Own Device, Bring Your Own Technology exemplars on his blog, and looking at two SecEd resources, one article from Bob Harrison about where the ICT computer science debate is going from now and the CPD implications for that, and another PDF about Ofsted and a few really good tips from that site on Ofsted and the coming Ofsted infrastructure. And lastly, we will look at how primary schools are sleepwalking to their doom, according to one inspector in a PDF at the end. Okay, let's start up with a Teach Meet next week, and that is the Northern History Network Teach Meet, which has only got a sort of banner headline on the Teach Meet wiki, which kind of confused me, because when I clicked on the link, it then took me to the Northern History Network and the key info and an advertisement for it costing £100. But if you go further down there and have a look on the 3rd of December, they do talk about a Teach Meet, which I presume doesn't cost or isn't part of that 4-day CPD. At least I hope it doesn't, because that would be a little bit of an abuse of the Teach Meet ethos. And if you go there, you'll see that there is a little meetup on Monday, 3rd of December at Huddersfield, 4 to 6 p.m. I'm desperately trying to find out where the information is, because I've actually just looked and it's not telling me. Let's have a look. Let's go back to the see if I can find the Teach Meet itself. Northern History Network, sign up via NHN. Ah, and it does seem that the Northern History Network blogs are down while I'm doing this. They were up about 5 minutes ago. I don't know why they've gone down, but there we go. Anyway, that's the Northern History Network, edublogs.org. If you look on there at another later time, you will see that there is a Teach Meet on Monday, the 3rd of December. If they put it up on the wiki, it wouldn't be down at this particular time. Must be EduBlogs itself is down, perhaps. Interesting that is the case once in a while. This is the problem with the internet once in a while. It's going to go down on you. A phrase for which I was ribbed immensely when I was an ICT teacher. I learned to avoid that particular phrase. Okay, let's go on to the next bit.ly, which is bit.ly/IOE_hack. And this site is up. It's the knowledgeillusion.wordpress.com from the Institute of Education. Last week, they promised to upload the pictures and some of the videos from the event, the hacking event at the TES London Festival of Education. And they are up now. And you'll see Rose Luckin setting the scene for some of the hacks and a few of the interviews. So there's three part videos. And there's a little YouTube video there, a bigger one, talking about how the pupils respond to what they were asked to do. And that is bit.ly/IOE hack. Next up is my interview with Terry Friedman at his site, which is ictineducation.org. I have put a link to all the hashtags with BYOD, and his latest case study is Wilden School, which has partly implemented Bring Your Own Device. Now, I'd suggest you just sit back and listen to my interview with Terry. You may have to turn it up a bit, because I was taping on a different machine and we had a little bit of problems with the levelling of people at either end. And that seems to be the case with the portable studio I'm setting up at my father's at the moment. So sit back and listen to what he says about Bring Your Own Device, because he is one of the few people who's gone out, researched and found the practice in this country. I'm with Terry Friedman, who is an ICT consultant who has a blog called ictineducation.org. Good afternoon, Terry.
Good afternoon, Leon. Thank you for inviting me.
And we go back a long way. Terry's been a consultant for a very long time. He's very well respected in the community. And I just thought it'd be interesting to sort of get his take on a couple of stories that are in the news at the moment. They're both on mobile phones, one in The Guardian, one in The Mail, but there's also others around, floating around. And they're kind of talking about a head teacher who'd banned mobile phones in his school, and he found he had better behaviour since he did that. What's your take on the whole thing, Terry?
Well, I think that with any kind of situation like this, head teachers know their schools better than any outsiders. And maybe that policy will work really well for his school and his kids and his staff. That doesn't necessarily mean that the same policy would work for other schools. Now, not sure if we'll come on to this a bit later, Leon, but I saw one comment which referred to banning mobile phones as a kind of an arms race. And I think that's right. You ban the phones or you try and find measures to detect kids bringing them in. And they come up with another ways to avoid that, like carrying two phones, one of which they don't mind handing over. And what do you actually do? You know, short of actually bringing in body scanners or something like that, I'm not sure how you do stop kids bringing them in. My own feeling on anything like this is that it's much better to be up front and out in the open as far as possible. I know there may be some people listening to this who may think, well, what does he know? But there's lots of research, for example, to say that online behaviour reflects offline behaviour. So the kind of pupils who are going to get up to mischief or place themselves in danger online are usually the very kids who are going to do so offline. Now, I don't know if you want to go any further with that now, but the other thing I would say is that there's always a kind of a knee-jerk reaction about this sort of thing. But I wonder if the Daily Mail would have published an article had there been a school, and there are probably some, where by introducing mobile phones, their results have improved. That doesn't sound like such a good headline. Now, with some of the schools I've been looking at in the case studies, the early indications are that there are benefits of allowing students to bring in their own devices, not necessarily their own phones, but their own devices. But that's not such a brilliant headline, is it? And it's not going to get people fired up so much. So I'm always a little bit wary about these kind of knee-jerk type reaction headlines. But as I said at the beginning, the head teacher, Mr. Fenn, knows his kids better than and his school better than I do, and better than anyone else, I presume. And if he felt it was the right thing for his school, good on him. I don't feel I'm in a position to make any kind of judgment about that sort of thing.
Yeah, I liked one of the teacher's comments at I think it was The Guardian. He said, sure, yes, you should ban them. When they're in my class, I make sure they're all turned off, and if anyone takes one out, I confiscate it, so that when I do work with them, then I can do it properly. And I thought that was quite a good comment, because he'd actually set the boundaries very, very clearly for the kids, obviously, and that meant that he knew how he was going to progress in his style of using them.
Well, one of the documents that I came across, and I think it's from Sweden or Denmark, one of those places, I unfortunately can't find the reference at the moment, but Russell Prue mentioned it, you know, the speaker and consultant, Russell Prue, he mentioned it, and he's got a link to it on his website, which I'll just mention, actually, because if people want this resource, it's andertontiger.com. This was an official publication which talked about how to use mobile phones in the classroom and about classroom management. And one of the suggestions it makes, which is ridiculously simple, is to tell the students to put their phones on the desk in front of them at the start of the lesson. It's pretty easy to tell if a kid's texting or something like that if the phone is in front of them. And someone else, and I don't have his permission to quote him, so I suppose I'd best not say who it was, but one of the people whose school I talked to about for one of the case studies said that if kids are texting when they shouldn't be texting or doing anything like that, they usually give off other signals that they're misbehaving. So he regarded it as a class management, you know, behavior management issue, rather than just purely a mobile phone issue. So I'm not trying to belittle these kind of points that people are concerned about and the disruption and so on. But I do think there are ways of managing it. And I think being completely open and upfront and saying to the kids, you can bring them in, but you can only use them when we've agreed that you can use them, I think is fine. I do have other problems with that, I have to say, but maybe we can talk about that. But I actually think that's a lot healthier than simply banning them.
Yeah. So can I ask you, on your site, you've got eight BYOD, bring your own device case studies to mobile learning through iPads and iPods. Can you tell us what motivated you to build up that resource, or did it just grow naturally?
The reason was, the initial reason was that I was approached by a consultant and writer in Australia, or from Australia, called Mal Lee, who was in the process of writing a book about bring your own device and wanted one which was also a version which was UK based. And he asked me if I would like to get involved. And I said yes. So I started looking at it. And along the way, I took in a couple of iPad type, iPad and iPod type schools and initiatives, as you've seen. But mostly I was focused on bring your own device. So that's how that came about.
And how did you go about getting the info on all the different case studies?
With great difficulty. And I think that's for several reasons. First of all, I don't think that many schools are actually doing it. And I don't think that's simply a question of my not being able to find lots of schools, because I've asked around and I've asked academics, because it's always been a nightmare for me that while I'm saying, well, I can only find a few schools doing it, someone will suddenly pop up saying, what are you talking about? There's 38 schools in my borough alone doing it. So I don't think there are that many schools doing it. So a search on the internet tends to not lead to very much results, not for the UK anyway. Because the other thing is that the schools that are thinking about doing it, or have just started doing it, on the whole, tend not to publicise the fact. And in fact, a researcher at the Open University called Mike Sharples sent me an email saying, I wonder if this is the policy that dare not speak its name. And I think he's correct. It's very, very hard to actually see anything public where schools are actually doing this, or going down bring your own device. And I think another difficulty is that the very term bring your own device means different things to different people. So, for example, some people define it as, we will buy iPod Touches for everyone in the school, and they can take them home and then bring them in. So that is bring your own device in a sense, but it's not in the sense that I originally had in mind, or indeed Mal Lee had in mind. Bring your own device, I think, should be bring the device that you tend to use when you're at home, whatever that happens to be. I mean, that's why there's another term, bring your own technology, which is slightly more wide ranging than that. So the way I went about getting the information is by asking in various forums. I also put something up on my blog saying this is what I was looking for. And I also asked at every conference I went to if, you know, I'd sit next to someone and say, just out of interest, do you know of anyone doing, any schools doing bring your own device? And I got a few leads that way. So it's a bit of a grape shot strategy. But that's how I managed to get those. And there are a few more that I'm refining at the moment. But it was quite difficult to get hold of them. And the other thing is the landscape changes quite a lot, I think. So, for example, in one area where last year I couldn't find any examples whatsoever, there are now one or two examples coming through. It's very, very early days. I think there are probably lots of schools that are thinking about it, and maybe even lots of schools who are putting in very small scale pilots, but there really aren't that many schools who feel confident or are yet at the position where they can say, we are doing this, and making it incredibly well known. So that's, sorry, Leon, go on.
Yeah, it's a bit like the teach meets, where it all used to be very much dominated by primary practitioners, I thought, apart from people like Russell Tarr, who does all the history stuff, and the Fruit Machine originally. And now there seems to be far more secondary practitioners, and they might shoot me down for this, coming along and blogging where they weren't before. I think it because that middle adoption landscape is beginning to settle into place, and you're getting a lot more people coming out from initial teacher education, and so they feel a bit more comfortable with doing it, and the ability to do it is so much easier and faster, possibly. I don't know. It's hard to tell, isn't it, really?
I think these things take time to bed in and become mainstream. And from that point of view, I'm not sure the kind of newspaper articles you've referred to are particularly helpful, because people are worried about this sort of thing anyway. They're worried about what kids are going to do on their phones. And also parents, one head teacher, and I've heard this before, one head teacher said, the difficulty is that parents see these kind of devices, phones, even tablets, iPads, and so on, as distractors, which of course they would do, wouldn't they? Because when the kids are using these things at home, 9 times out of 10, they're sitting there on Facebook and they're doing various things, playing games, and possibly their parents don't see them using it seriously. So there's that kind of a barrier to get through as well, you know, convincing people that it's a worthwhile activity. And I would imagine that it was the same with teach meets. You know, when teach meets were perceived as six people in a sitting in a room somewhere talking about what they have done, maybe that didn't seem particularly useful. But I think it's grown into its its own at the moment. I mean, one of the things that we're going slightly off the subject. One of the things I found really interesting is that now there seems to be a growing tendency towards specialist teach meets. So I attended a teach meet a little while ago, organised by Anthony Evans, Skinny Boy Evans, and that was about iPads and iPad apps. There's been one from the Dyslexia Association about special educational needs and that area. So I find that very exciting as well.
Yeah, well, what I find good is that, as you say, these things have spread out. Now you've got an SLT SLT chat, which is, but even within that, people have started to criticize people for being too vague and too general. They want a more specific, more refined, more nuanced conversation. So they're fed up of people sort of trying to change the world by saying generalist statements. This might upset a few people, but they want actually more focus. And I think that's a good thing. I think that there should be more criticism starting to come on board and more people being more reflective and wanting a bit of a more professionalism, even within that ad hoc framework. Because I think it's about time it's reached that point where you can actually put things in place. So I don't know. I don't know what you think about that.
I missed the very last bit of what you said, Leon, because it suddenly cut out. When you said you think it's good that people are more focused and want to be, and that they're being slightly critical in a good sense, but I missed the very end of what you said. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry. It, even if it's more formalised in an ad hoc situation, it's more formalised, it's more focused, and people want a level of detail and depth. Maybe they're not going to get it in that particular medium, but they're starting to criticise people and saying, well, they don't want all this generalist, almost evangelical talk about the world. How about a bit more focus and a bit more, you know, what are the strategies that you're going to do?
No, absolutely. I think that is absolutely right. When I went to the teach meet about iPad apps the other week, I wanted to hear of some really good iPad apps that would help me and that I could pass on to others. I wasn't particularly interested in listening to someone standing up saying, well, I've used iPads and they're really, really good. And my kids love it and it's been a really good motivator, because I wouldn't need to go to a teach meet to hear that. And I think we live in an age where people's time, well, it's probably always been the case, people's time, especially teachers' time, is incredibly valuable. They just don't have time for that kind of persiflage. I just think...
I haven't heard that word in years.
You want to know what's what, and you want it quickly, and you want it now.
Persiflage, goodness me.
Sorry.
I know what it means. But yeah, great stuff. So, and there's the other aspect now, to come back to the sort of mobile devices, is the one that's put forward by Dr. Brian Bandy, who has been talking on the LinkedIn chat or forums about the duty of care that someone has to have within the school. And this is probably the one thing that people are most concerned about, the e-safety aspect, that something especially to do with cyberbullying.
Well, I've thought of a number of points about this, and I'd like to start off by saying I'm not an e-safety expert, so or a legal expert. So I do think people need to investigate these things for themselves. But the first thing I would say is that this is a new area of development, or relatively new area. So nobody has all the answers, and there may even be issues that we haven't thought of yet. And I came across a really good question in a draft paper about mobile learning. And this was to do with the learning aspect, but I think it could equally apply to the e-safety aspect. And this person was saying, we haven't really thought about what it means to think mobile. What is it to think mobile? What is it that makes mobile learning different from other kind, or learning with mobile devices different from other kinds of learning? I think a similar kind of thing probably applies in the e-safety sphere. You know, teachers do need to sit down and think, and schools need to sit down and think, okay, what are the things that could go wrong? How are we going to deal with them? But my understanding is, so I'm not saying that schools shouldn't address the issues. I'm not one of these evangelical people who would say, don't worry, it'll all come out. Everything will work out fine, because if a child does end up having something awful done to them, or doing something awful, there's a real human being at the end of that process. So, does need to be addressed.
It could be something totally inappropriate that gets the senior management into complete trouble immediately, and then you won't see you won't see that happening ever again.
Exactly. I think there are a few things to think about. And the first thing is that my understanding, and again, I'll just reiterate, I'm not an expert in this, but my understanding is that risks have to be assessed and managed, not necessarily completely and utterly eliminated. And I was looking at a DfE, Department for Education, guidance document on health and safety, so not to do with e-safety as such. And in that, they've said the purpose is to help the purpose of this guidance is to help pupils undertake activities safely, not prevent the activities taking place. And one of the things it says there about what is reasonable in terms of safety, they say, well, what is reasonable is probably what you would expect a parent to be doing. So I don't know how far parents monitor what their kids are doing on these devices, but I would have thought that that's a good yardstick to go by. Unfortunately, I think there's a situation that terms like reasonable aren't defined until someone ends up in court.
Yeah.
But that's my understanding of it.
So can I ask you, have you seen in all your case studies at the moment, have you seen any patterns beginning to emerge, or things that are coming out of the mist? Because I mean, they're so rare, these things. But you know, you've seen quite a few now. Is there anything that's strikes you as being common?
Yes, I would say four things. Almost all of the schools I've looked at so far have already established an ethos of digital learning and innovation. So I think you referred to something called double digging in one of your podcasts, Leon. You can't expect, you know, if a head teacher announced tomorrow, good news, everyone, we're going down the bring your own device route, I'm pretty sure that wouldn't work. There does have to be a kind of a background and preparation and all of that sort of thing. And it has to come against, I believe, against a background of having done lots of innovative things anyway. That's number one. Number two, all of the schools I've looked at have started with small scale pilots, like with one group, one teacher, or a very small group of teachers and kids. Lots and lots of consultations with not only with other members of staff, but also, and this is pretty crucial, with parents and students. And they've involved students in the initiative, especially with regard to drawing up an acceptable use policy. Yeah. They've involved students very heavily in that. So those are the kind of things that are beginning to emerge, the common strands.
And are you going to put out any of this? Are you going to bundle it together or put it out as a bigger, larger work, do you think, in the future?
Yes. Well, at some point in the near future, I hope to have finished the book that I mentioned right at the beginning, the UK version of the Australian book that I was asked to work on. So it will certainly come out in that. And in the meantime, I'm continuing to kind of put bits out on my blog, which hopefully people will find useful. But what the book will do is draw it all together and kind of draw out some common principles. So the idea is that any school thinking about going down the bring your own device route will have what is in effect a checklist of issues to think about and some suggestions with case studies to draw on.
Now that would be very useful for people, because actually they'll sort of have a, you know, they'll be able to contact people and talk things through, and that, as you say, is extremely hard to do in at the sort of leading edge of innovation, because no one's doing it. So it's emergent. So you can't tell what the common factors are until you start to see them emerge. And so you have to look in the footsteps of other people. And can I just remind people that your website is www.ictineducation.org, and that's where people can look for all this information in the meantime.
Thank you.
Are there any other projects you're involved with that you'd like to tell people that you're involved with coming out that they might sort of hook onto?
Well, I'm doing various bits of writing. I'm just open to suggestions, basically, Leon. You know, if anyone wants to approach me for work, advice type work, then I'm always open. And I'm working at the moment for Vital, updating or putting things on their edfutures.net website. That's very exciting. And various other bits and pieces. So no, I can't think of anything else. I just continue to update the blog every day, if I can, and give advice where I can.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the problem being someone who's in ICT or computer science and being in an advisory role at the moment is it's like a minefield anyways. There's lots of, everything is moving. It's like moving on that sort of wobbly bridge, basically. You know you're going to get to the end of it, but you're not sure how you're going to get to the end of it in the common climate.
Exactly. Well, actually, if I could just say on that, Leon, that my approach to all of these things has always been to kind of read the stuff, look at what people are saying, think about it, and then kind of decide what my feelings are about it and try and come up with something useful after a couple of weeks. So I'm never usually first with the news, as it were, but I always try and reflect on things rather than have a knee-jerk reaction. So, and if you actually look at things very carefully, quite often the same sort of issues come up again and again and again, but in a different guise. Certainly over periods of 5 or 10 years, they will seem to come up again anyway.
Yeah, they do. And I think that's what you do best. You actually have a long fuse to reflect on things. And I think really people should pop along to your site. So thank you so much, Terry, for the interview this afternoon.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Leon.